Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Katie G, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, March 13th. Today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are on page 33, paragraph 3, to be gravely affected. Today's readers are Carrie, 12 steps, Sarah, 12 traditions, and our text readers are Katie F., Marita, and Sandy D. The reference number for yesterday, Wednesday, March 12th, is 6031. 6031. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Carrie M. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Carrie, a grateful recovering compulsive eater in Vermont. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you. I pass, and thank you for your service, Katie.
Thank you, Carrie. I will now ask Sarah to read the 12 traditions. Sarah?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Sarah, and I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Here are the 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such would never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Sarah. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and the literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, plus star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. And please note, we may have some technology challenges today. Please stay muted unless you are sharing so that we may have a quiet meeting. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 33, paragraph 3, starting with to be gravely affected. I will now ask Katie F. to begin our reading.
Good morning. This is Katie F., a recovered compulsive overeater in Virginia. To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time, nor take the quantities some of us have. This is particularly true of women. Potential female alcoholics often turn into the real thing and are gone beyond recall in a few years. Certain drinkers, who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics, are astonished at their inability to stop. We who are familiar with the symptoms see large numbers of potential alcoholics among young people everywhere, but try to get them to see it. And there's a star, and it's at the bottom it says, true when this book was first published, but a 1998 U.S.-Canada membership survey showed about one-fifth of AAs were 30 and under. And again, I'm Katie, a recovered compulsive overeater. To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time nor take the quantities some of us have. I went to my first OA meeting when I was 14 years old. I was in ninth grade, and I went with my mother and one of my friends. And I thought it was really stupid. I remember someone saying that they realized they had popped a cucumber in their mouth and they spit it out because it wasn't what they committed. And I just thought that was just the dumbest thing I'd ever heard. So, of course, I left, and 7 years later, I came back 30 pounds heavier. And, you know, that's still not gravely affected. And so I sat in the rooms for 6 years, not identifying in. And I had to get gravely affected in the rooms of OA. I gained another 40 pounds and on top of the 30. And, you know, I wanted to drive off the road. And I was diagnosed with a hiatal hernia at the age of 24. So, you know, I was starting to have the physical effects. And the quantities of food that I ate when I was 26 compared to when I was 14 is huge. I mean, if you could see a movie, you know, picture a video of flashback between, you know, the two scenarios, it was a huge difference in how much food I ate 12 years later than I did before. So I have to believe at 53, you know, I've been abstinent now for 26 years, that this is a progressive disease, and it would, you know, I really believe I would be the man of 30, that I would be dead in a short order if I went back to the food. But I don't walk around white-knuckling and afraid of, you know, the Dunkin' Donuts store. I am a free woman today, and that's the miracle of this program, that it's not, I don't have to compare myself to how awful someone else's story is and that it sounds worse than mine, and so maybe I'm not that bad. And I don't have to think, well, I never weighed 200 pounds, so it might not be that bad. I just have to look at my own experience of it did get worse. It did keep getting worse and worse and worse and worse. So you can either identify in today and say, you know, okay.
Thank you, Katie. And who would like to share this morning on what was read?
Okay.
Lori from Connecticut.
I'm sorry, Katie, did I cut you off?
The thing started, I don't know what happened, but I'm fine. That's fine. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I'm having some technical issues. Would you like to finish, Katie? I'd love to give you that opportunity.
Okay. I'm just saying that you can identify in with to be gravely affected and say that you have hit bottom where you are today. Or you can say, no, it's not that bad. And I choose to say it was bad enough. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Katie. I appreciate your patience. And I'd like to now ask who would like to share this morning on what was read.
Lori from Connecticut, compulsive overeater.
Okay, Lori, go ahead.
In this reading, it brought back the memory of 1990 was my very first meeting, and I'll never forget as long as I live with this disease that I have. At the end of the meeting, and of course back then I was like 160 pounds, you know, and this woman, we're walking in the parking lot, and I'm walking back to my car, and this woman says to me, very mean, she says, wait, you're going to be over 300 pounds if you don't keep coming to these meetings. Well, that turned me off. That was my very first meeting, so I didn't go back. And I maintained 160 and all this, and then I got up to 310 pounds in my 40s. Well, long story short, I came back to OA about a year ago, and I've been coming ever since. You know, I still have sloppy days, but I struggle with my abstinence, but I'll do good for a couple weeks and then I have a hard time. But it's so true, this reading, to be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time nor take the quantities some of us have. That's the physical allergy, you know, and I can see that when I do pick up a binge food after staying abstinent these days for a couple of weeks, and I do pick up a binge food, that allergy comes right back. And then I crave, you know, but if I remain abstinent one day at a time, call my food sponsor in the morning and stay spiritually fit, do my meditation and prayer in the morning, pray throughout the day, meditate throughout the day, I can remain abstinent. And that's what I want. I want that peace. I want so badly this program. I have that gift of desperation, and I am forever grateful to God and you people, and thank you for your service. Bye-bye. That's it. Pass.
Thank you, Lori. And who would like to share on what was read?
This is Sherry from Georgia.
Sherry, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. You know, when I was married to my first husband, he was an alcoholic, but I never, never could say that my husband was an alcoholic. I knew that it was troublesome. And, you know, I couldn't even say that he was. So I had no idea what I was. And I was just as sick as he was, and just, you know, we were just fine, you know. I'm not going to say what fine stands for on the phone, but you could probably imagine. But I went to a little get-together lunch yesterday with some Al-Anon friends and at someone's house, and she had cooked, you know, spaghetti and salad and bread and stuff like that. And I heard them say that there would be a carrot cake and something else there. And it didn't bother me. It didn't bother me. And I went, and I was immune from that. It was like I was in God's cocoon, and it was just what a contentment, what a gift that I am not looking at the item and staring at it, and it was just a gift. And I want to say one more thing about getting abstinent. I had to finally, my dog just jumped on me. I had to finally, oh gosh, surrender my disease, my life, my issues, my defects, and I just said, here, you know, I can't do it. I give them to you. And it was so complete. I would say it qualified for a spiritual experience. And I'm very, very grateful for OA. And maybe one day soon I'll be able to say that I am a grateful compulsive overeater, because that and Al-Anon is where I discovered a power greater than myself that was not on this big pedestal to have a relationship with. Thank you. I'll pass.
This is Katie G. I am a recovered compulsive overeater, and I just want to share a little bit on what was read this morning. So to be gravely affected. So what does gravely mean? Death. Death. We're dying, right? Look, in my adult life, I've been 228 pounds and 110 pounds, but it doesn't matter. I was greatly insulted if you told me that I had a problem, especially when I was anorexic, especially when I was 110 pounds, because I misunderstood the disease, right? Like, I'm thin now. I'm controlling my food now. So back off. I don't need your 12-step program. But what was astonishing is my inability to stop the compulsive behaviors around the food. It was the holidays. I could not stop. I had to go to the gym. I had to starve myself. I had to do these controlling behaviors around the food. And I was in total self mode, right? Like I didn't want to think. I'm like, oh well, I'm not as sick as you guys. Like I'm not doing things as badly as you are. I'm not paralyzed in a wheelchair because I'm, you know, 300 pounds yet. And what I learned, I think the most amazing thing that I've heard sometime in program is, like, if you want to know what your bottom is, stop digging. Like, for me to be gravely affected, if I continued on in my compulsive overeating behaviors, I would have died. But it wasn't until I came into these rooms, stayed abstinent in a committed way, and started being explained the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind, that it doesn't matter what my physical manifestations are. It doesn't matter if I'm having problems with diet soda or with a hot fudge sundae. If I'm having problems, if the phenomenon of craving is being ignited in me when I put in that substance into my body, but I cannot stop from starting having diet soda or a hot fudge sundae, then I'm identifying in. I'm a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety. I have a peculiar mental twist, and I am beyond human aid. And it wasn't until I found a clean way to put down my food and to work the steps to get rid of the larger handicap of my selfishness, my dishonesty, my self-centeredness, and my fear, so that eating was not a step up from how I felt, so that compulsive exercising was not a step up, so that Katie stopped running the show, that I started getting some freedom, you know, and that's what this paragraph means to me. And with that, I'll pass Who else would like to share on what was read this morning? Okay, if no
it's
one else
Leah.
Wants to share. Oh, excuse me. Go ahead, Leah.
Oh, I'll hop in there. Thank you, Katie, for your service. Good morning, everyone. My name is Leah. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I also wanted to speak on that statement. To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time, nor take the quantity some of us have. I mean, mine is, you know, my story is one where, you know, I started compulsive overeating very young, and I've shared a lot about that on the line. You know, one of my first binges was St. Joseph baby aspirin, because I liked the taste when I was about 3 years old. But my disease took off there, and I crashed and burned at the age of 23. But it's important to remember here what makes a compulsive overeater. You know, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time, nor take the quantity some of us have. So what does make up a compulsive overeater? If it's not about length of time that we've been in the illness, and it's not about the quantities that we consume, and it's not about whether we're 10 pounds up or 70 pounds up, what makes a compulsive overeater? I think about that paragraph on page 44 that really keeps it very, very simple for us. It says, in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, which of course refers to the obsession of the mind, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, which is in reference to the allergy of the body, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. So, you know, if we have allergy of the body and we have obsession of the mind, you know, you're good to go. You know, you don't have to eat yourself up, high weights or, do some of the shenanigans that some of us have done in order to qualify in. In fact, you know, Bill writes about that in the AA 12 and 12. The first 100 that came into AA were the last, you know, they were last gaspers. These were low bottom drunks that first came in. They had lost their jobs, lost their homes, lost their families, were sleeping in the gutter, many of them. Did everybody that came in after those first 100 have to have drunk themselves into that condition? And the answer was no. You know, Bill raises the definition of bottom for everybody. He says, you know, by going back in our own drinking histories, we can show that years before we realized we were out of control, our drinking even then was no mere habit, that it was indeed the beginning of a fatal progression. You know, so if there are young folks on the line, or even not so young, hey, you know, this thing never gets better. You know, it only gets worse. It never gets better. I know for me, I had to continue, you know, my life was deteriorating faster than I could lower my standards. You know, this disease, you know, I knew I was a compulsive overeater, you know, from a very young age. I've been, you know, hiding out in movie theaters and binging my brains out since I was 8 years old. Nothing new going on there. That's not a news flash for someone like me. And things got much worse. I did not know what I was up against. I did not understand the depths to which this disease would take me. I did not see the writing on the wall. And even after coming into Overeaters Anonymous in 1982, any little understanding that I had, an awareness of the illness through, other resources in addition to Overeaters Anonymous, that awareness, that knowledge never stopped me from compulsive overeating. You know, so perhaps those of us that are on the line that are recovered and can share with you that we knew we were in trouble long before we made an honest admission, that we were a compulsive overeater. Perhaps our stories can help you make that admission yourself. You know, perhaps you don't have to go to the lengths that some of us did, and that's a good thing. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Leah. And would anyone like to share on what was read before we move on?
This is Larry.
Sure, Larry. Hi, go ahead. Oh. I'm sorry, who was the second person?
Alina.
Alina. Okay, we're going to have Larry share, and then you'll be up.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning. Larry, recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago. Thank you, Katie, for your service. Yeah, it, you know, I can remember, you know, before I ever came into the rooms of OA, you know, I knew I was in trouble, boy. Absolutely. You know, it was, you know, a bakery box every morning, you know, and it was multiple items every morning, you know, and I remember, you know, just the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I mean, it was just, it was horrible. You know, I was a walking zombie, and yet, you know, on paper, I probably looked pretty good, you know, you know, had all the things that, and to most people that didn't understand, of course, I practiced my disease in isolation and in secrecy most of the time. In fact, I'd say almost all the time. So it was later on, no doubt, that people were surprised that I was going to OA meetings, you know, for those that I had shared that with. But I remember, you know, walking, you know, to be gravely affected. I mean, yeah, I was knocking on death's door. There's no question. But I remember walking into the rooms, and, you know, one would think this was a disease. First off, it's just women. You know, unlike AA, you walk into most OA rooms, as we sort of walk into this room, and, you know, it might be 90% or more women. And so a guy like me, you know, walking in there, I would think, well, this isn't for me. You know, this is a woman's affliction, you know, and I didn't see a lot of young people in there either, you know. And when I walked in the rooms, I still felt, I don't know, kind of young. maybe I wasn't so young, but, you know, but then I learned that over time, it didn't get through my thick skull very quickly. I'm a slow learner. But I learned that I had an allergy of the body, that when I took in these substances, you know, something happened, something strange happened. And I had this adverse reaction, and I had it every time, you know, and I could quickly separate that I don't binge on broccoli. There may be some who do. I don't. You know, some maybe, you know, I never binged on water, never had a glass of water and wanted 50 more, but some may, I don't know. But I knew very quickly what my binge substances were. I didn't, unless I wanted to deceive myself, I knew what they were. You know, I knew what I was eating for entertainment. I knew that what I was eating, that I, once I had some, I needed 50. You know, I had one bagel, I wanted the dozen, and I ate a dozen. Many, many times. So the second aspect, you know, that I learned about, again, that we talk about so much, but if you don't get it, that's why we talk about it so much, is the obsession of the mind. And that's the thing that brings me back to playing traffic. You know, first time I read that about jaywalking, I thought, well, what in the heck does this have to do with my problem, really? You know, I mean, but, you know, again and again, I would go out and play in traffic and get run over by a Mack truck. And lo and behold, you know, Monday morning comes and I'm right back at it, playing out in traffic. Another bag of bagels, another this, another that. You know, and it was killing me. It was a grave, grave affliction. And it was not just killing me physically, it was killing me emotionally and spiritually. You know, I was lacking connection, and I was insane, absolutely. I was separated from the truth. Let's just put it that way. And, you know, once I fully understood, then it didn't matter that there were 90 or, you know, 100% women in the room. I was one of you. And then maybe some other men would see me and they would say, you know what? Truth be told, I am the same. You know, I'm the same as you, Larry. And so they could see that a spiritual solution, that was the only answer for me. And that's what it said in this book, and that's indeed what the only answer for me was a spiritual solution. But I was, again, to try to prove that that wasn't the case. You know, and there's many people just like me that could come in this room at 14, 20, 30, 70. You know, we will try to deceive ourselves to think that we can get a tighter this, a tighter that, tighter control over the food, tighter, you know, just wasn't happening for me. You know, we will take this disease to our grave if we allow it. Or maybe we'll get lucky and maybe we'll figure it out before then. I thank God that I did. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Larry. And Alina, you'd like to share on what was read?
Hi, I'm Alina.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Alina. This is my first time sharing at the phone meeting. I'm in recovery from food addiction, compulsive overeating. I wanted to share about this. This actually passage in the Big Book really affects me deeply. Gravely affects me deeply, because if it wasn't for this program, I probably would be heading towards the grave. Certain drinkers who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics, well, I came into program, I was 21 years old, and call me a compulsive overeater, I would have slapped you in the face. You tell me I had a food problem, I was in major denial, didn't even know I was lying to myself. And basically walked out of OA after a couple meetings, did a little bit more research, and found that I needed this program more than I needed anything else in my life. Came back 3 years later, even heavier, over 200 pounds. And by the grace of God, I'm abstinent today. I have been in my recovery, I'm 34 now, in a chronic relapse. And it's not because I wasn't gravely affected, because I was gravely affected. It was because I was in denial, and I didn't know, I didn't have, somebody said, a beyond human aid. I didn't realize I was beyond human aid, and that was one of my problems, was a spiritual bankruptcy. And I work at a college, and they talk about in the Big Book about young people, and I know that's changed since 1998, but I'll tell you something. I do wish that at 21 I got it, but let me tell you, I've learned so much on my journey that I'm like I said, I'm older now, and I'm realizing that it is one day at a time program, and that I can be gravely affected, but also surrender my will and my addiction to God. And I'm familiar with the symptoms, the large numbers of potential alcoholics, food addicts, compulsive overeaters out there. And I'll tell you, we are blessed, and I'll talk about myself. I am blessed that I'm in this program. I'm blessed that I'm accepting God's gift today. This morning, I thank God. And I thank God for this meeting. It's been really helping me. Getting to live meetings aren't always easy, so I thank you all for letting me share. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Alina. And I'd like to ask Marita to continue our reading, please. Marita?
Good morning, Vision for You. This is Marita, compulsive overeater, recovered. As we look back, we feel we had gone on drinking many years beyond the point where we could quit on our own willpower. If anyone questions whether he has entered this dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for 1 year. If he is a real alcoholic and very far advanced, there is scant chance of success. In the early days of our drinking, we occasionally remained sober for a year or more, becoming serious drinkers again later. So you may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential alcoholic. We thank few to whom this book will appeal can stay dry anything like a year. Some will be drunk the day after making their resolution, most of them within a few weeks. Yes, this paragraph is talking to me this morning. I in the past was able to put down the food. Every now and then, I was able to stay on a diet and become thin I remember when I was 15, I went from 155 down to 119 in a month, and felt great, and got a boyfriend and started eating. And in college, I went from, I don't know how much I was weighing, but I got myself back down to 119. And I was crazy in my brain, though. Every time I lost the weight, it didn't really matter. It didn't really matter because I was still in my own head. My head was messed up. And I would pick the food back up and basically numb myself out and hide from my own thinking, my own feelings, my own inability to cope with reality. So these guys are challenging us here to look at ourselves carefully. And if we are still in doubt about whether or not this is a disease that we identify in with, then let's just try putting it down. If it turns out that we're not out of control, then we ought to be able to control it. They're saying, yeah, put it down for a year. And that's a logical, reasonable challenge. If this doesn't really affect me, I can just stop doing it, and then I'll know, because I'll be fine. But we all know if this book truly appeals to us, which is what they're saying, this book is appealing to people who have this problem. Otherwise, why would I bother looking at it? Why would it fascinate me that these people are saying that they've recovered? Why do I care? I care because what they are saying is happening to them is happening to me. And I'm so grateful. We have a roadmap. We have a way out using the 12 steps, 12 traditions in this fellowship. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for AA. Anna.
Thank you, Marita. And who would like to comment on what was read?
This is Bella. Can I share?
You can, Bella. I think I heard someone before you. Was there somebody else that
yeah,
I heard?
No. Yael.
Okay,
yeah.
And was so yeah, I have Yael and Bella. Was there anyone else? Okay, fantastic. We're going to start with Yael, and then we'll go to Bella. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you for your service. I just want to, I know I've said this before, and I guess I want to reinforce the point that for some of us, it wasn't even the number on the scale that, you know, that did it. I was actually already in a thin place, in a thin body, and the obsession of the mind was just taking over. That when we're talking about, you know, the feeling the grave coming close, I felt like I was dying as a person. And, you know, it came to the point, am I going to live my life like a numbing robot, just doing things and doing without feeling, or am I going to turn to spiritual tools to help me get out of this and to actually become the me I was meant to be? So it's not necessarily connected to a scale or to the weight, because I felt my grave when I was at my lowest. So lowest weight-wise, I'm sorry, I meaning, but my spiritual condition, my inner essence was dying. So thank you. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Yael. And Bella.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Bella, and I'm a thankful recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you, Kelly, for doing this service, and thank you very much, everybody that is on the line. As we look back, Thank you, God, that I live now the present, that I have the power to live the present. And now that I am living the present, I have the strength to look back without guilt and blame and shame. Yes, I can look back and see, yes, my back, that, yes, I am a compulsive overeater, and I can accept and admit that I am gravely affected. Then in my past, I was so much afraid for my own self that I couldn't even live the present. So I was looking at the future that it will be most probably so miserable because, you know, and again, I was blaming because of my parents, because of my friends, because. And I was afraid to look at the past. Now I look back. It's okay. I can look back and to say, yes, I am a compulsive overeater. And yes, I was affected. My whole behavior was affected and not only my food disorder. And thank you, God, that I am now connected and I know that my past, my looking back, it was only a ladder for me to build myself up and to be able to build a stronger future and to be connected with the truth and with the honest. And thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Bella. And who else would like to comment on what was read? Kim?
Lorena from Pittsburgh.
Okay, I heard Kim and Lauren. Was there someone I missed? Great, let's get started with Kim.
Good morning, Katie. Good morning, all. My name is Kim G, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from South Jersey. We say few to whom this book will appeal can stay dry anything like a year. Some will be drunk one day after making the resolution, so most of them within a few weeks. So dry is a big word. You know, that means you're just addressing the allergy of the body. Just addressing the allergy of the body. Because remember, we have this twofold illness. So who is this book going to appeal to? This book's going to appeal to those of us who are the real alcoholic. Those of us that have the allergy of the body, that once we pick up a certain substance, we can no longer reasonably predict how much we're going to eat. And the second part is the people who have that obsession of the mind like me, that even when I don't have those foods and I'm not triggering that allergy, my mind is torturing me, telling me the only way I'm ever going to get ease and comfort is to pick up that food again. You know, we see it so often here, this is a one-day-at-a-time program. I'll tell you the trick is one day at a time in a row. In a row. You know, I used to think I was successful in a way if I was abstinent more than I was not abstinent. You know, getting 30 days together was such an accomplishment, and it was wonderful. And the freedom from the allergy not being triggered is wonderful. I'm sleeping better. My stomach's not in distress. I'm able to concentrate on what people are saying. And I thought that was it. I thought that was it. Oh, cool. God has removed my obsession. God hasn't done anything. I haven't done any work yet. All I'm doing is being dry. And if that is what's going to happen, if all I'm going to do is work on being abstinent, if abstinence is my goal and I am the real alcoholic, I am destined to go back. So why does this book appeal to those to those of us who have this disease? Because this treats the larger aspect of my disease. The reason I come to Overeaters Anonymous is not because I have an allergy to the body. I can go to a conventional diet program. I can go to a gym. I can go to a doctor and say, listen, I need a food plan because I seem to not be able to eat certain foods, and they can tell me how to avoid those foods. But who this book is going to appeal to are those of us where abstinence is the problem. Abstinence is my problem. Because you know what abstinence brings me? It brings me restlessness. It brings me irritability. It brings me discontentment. And when I once in a while will accidentally ask a normal person to, you know, share something from my food history, the looks of like, you know, just like, who the heck are you? Because my mind is so twisted. I remember when I was, you know, I first started in abstinence, and for me, one of the ways that effect happens is with volume. So I have to weigh and measure my food. If volume creates that effect, we need to figure out ways to not trigger that effect. And I do that by weighing and measuring. And I had bought this big thing of applesauce, and I was measuring it out every single day. And one day I noticed the applesauce was turning pink. And I said to my sponsor, what's going on? And she's like, Kim, it went bad. I'm like, what do you mean it went bad? Food never went bad. I had no idea what it meant for food to spoil. Because every box I opened, every bag I opened, I ate everything. There were no leftovers in my house. if I explain that to someone who maybe just has the allergy of the body or someone who doesn't have any kind of eating problems, they're going to look at me like, what is your problem? Why would you even try to eat pink applesauce? But that's the issue. The other day, too, just a quick thing before I close is I have served ice cream to my father on Christmas, and I'm having them over in a month for Easter. I had to ask a woman at work, I'm like, does ice cream go bad? Because I don't know. I've never had ice cream in my freezer long enough to understand what goes bad. And she was laughing at me. I'm like, well, I'm laugh what you want, but can you tell me? Do I have to throw it out and buy a new one? I didn't know if it lasted 3 months. So this is the book that will appeal to people like me, people who have this allergy of the body, but I can no longer reasonably predict how much I'm going to eat once I pick it up. And even more, the person that has the obsession of the mind. So cannot stay dry longer than a year. I couldn't stay dry from breakfast to lunch at the end. And if what we're thinking is that OA is about getting a couple weeks of abstinence and picking up and being able to get back on track, that's what I thought it was too. And that's so sad because you know what? You can be recovered. Overeaters Anonymous, the miracle today is I no longer want to eat my binge food. I am not tortured. If that appeals to you, please, please identify those foods. Put those foods down. Get into this book. Apply the steps. And you too can have a spiritual experience sufficient to bring about recovery. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Kim. And Lauren S., go ahead.
Thank you. Lauren S., a recovered compulsive overeater from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Does anyone question whether they are of this distinct class? Let them try leaving liquor alone for 1 year. We still have a few pages to go to see if we're a true compulsive overeater. We're still on the mental obsession. And until we read a few paragraphs on page 44 about our spiritual unmanageability, right now we're still trying to figure out, am I a compulsive overeater? What's my experience with step one? And Bill wisely puts up until this page 34, you know, perhaps you don't have to experiment. You don't have to test your insanity because you might have identified with the allergy and our obsession we're talking about. And they're going to present examples and the doctor's opinion and Bill's story, you know, real concrete examples there. But perhaps you're reading this and you still don't know. Perhaps you still have reservations and you don't want to stop compulsively overeating. This is an experiment that Bill and the first group of people who wrote this book found helpful. I don't know about, for my experience, I can't leave food alone for 1 year without sponsors, without sponsees, without God, without prayer, without meditation, without meetings, without fellowship, without writing a letter to God, without a nutritionist. I need all of these things to stay abstinent and recovered by you, Lord. But if you are not sure, try staying abstinent for 1 year on your own, which means you don't have any of these power tools. You don't have God. You don't have a sponsor. You don't have a telephone to call others. And if you are not a real compulsive overeater, you can probably do that. Oh, gee, but that's just, I couldn't imagine that. I'm abstinent today, and I couldn't imagine. This experiment applies to me today. This is so powerful going through this recovery today, figuring out where am I still lacking in my step one? where am I still lacking? And where am I still depending on self? This isn't about food anymore for me. This is about my daily bedevilments, you know? Okay, thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Lauren. And who else would like to share on what was read?
Yael?
I'm sorry, what?
Yael?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for letting me share again. I just wanted to share that it was interesting because for me, I started off my journey in OA in what people call the diet support group for about 5 years, and I was able to stay abstinent. And the truth be said that I hardly ever touched the big book, so I didn't even know to look in there. But at that time, had I looked into the big book and it would have said, can you leave it for a year? I'd be like, hey, yeah, I can leave it for a year. You see, I'm up to 5 years. So I didn't think, I would not have thought myself in an overeater. But as expressed, whoever knows of Joe and Charlie, you know, this, if you do have the disease, it is progressive. Over time, symptoms start creeping up more and more and more and more. And what happened with me was after I broke my abstinence for 5 years, things just deteriorated and spiraled down, and I was doing crazy things I'd never done before. And it came to the point where I couldn't even leave food for a day. So I just want to say that even though, you know, at first I may have thought I was a hardcore eater, it is a progressive disease and it will become evident over time where you stand in the whole spectrum. Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah. I'm Carol from New Rochelle. I came in a little late. Could you tell me what we're reading, where we're up to?
Sure, Carol. We're on page 34. And I'd like you to just remind everyone to please press star 1 when you're not sharing. And who would like to share on what was read?
Hi, it's Sandy.
Hi, Sandy. Go ahead.
Hey, this is Sandy.
Sandy, would you please press star 1?
Hi, Katie. This is Sandy in New York. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you now. Great. Thanks, Sandy.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. So this paragraph is not so much about the allergy. When we talked about the allergy, we talked about wanting more and more and more. But this is about the obsession where I really want to stop. I wanted to stop so many times. And it's true that in the beginning, I could stop for a year. Even when I first came to OA, I stopped for 2 years. But that was 1988. And then ever since then, every time I tried to stop, the periods of abstinence got shorter and shorter. Why is that? Because the obsession progressed and the obsession got stronger and stronger. So in the end, the last time I put down my food, the longest I could make it was 6 days. So the obsession of the mind is the real problem, like everybody has said. If I could stop on my own, I would have. I would not do the steps. I would not read the book. I would not be calling people. I would not be praying so hard. I would not be doing all of the work if I didn't have to. But I have to. I really have to do all of this, everything that's encompassed in this book. And the book would not appeal to me if I didn't have, if I wasn't obsessed, if I didn't identify with almost every line. I would not do the work if I didn't have to, but I have to. And thanks very much for your service, and thanks for allowing me to share. I pass.
Thank you, Sandy. And we have time for one more quick share. Would anyone like to comment on what was read?
This is Patricia. May I share?
Hi, this is Diane. Yep. In New York.
Sorry, Diane, we're going to allow Patricia to share, and then we're going to have to close our meeting, but thanks. Patricia, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Patricia from North Carolina, recovered. I just want to share on this piece right here, if anyone has any questions, whether he has entered the dangerous area. I remember when I was trying to put down the food, and I remember my disease telling me, start tomorrow, start tomorrow. And I remember eating, and then I remember hearing that, again, start tomorrow. And then I remember I stopped, and it was like my mind was talking to me, and then I thought to myself, how many days have I been doing this? How many days have I been hearing that, start tomorrow? And when I questioned that question, it was like, I need help. I mean, that's when I really panicked, because I didn't know how many days I've been doing that, start tomorrow, start tomorrow. Anyways, and with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Diane, excuse me. Would you like to take a moment and share before we close?
Good morning. Thank you. What I was going to say is that when I first came into the program in 1986, I remember people saying to me, once it's in your head, it never leaves you. But, of course, I had to go do my own research. And so I was in program for a long time. Then I left, and then I came back 8 years later weighing 330 pounds, just totally miserable. And so 9 years ago, I gave up sugar and wheat, and I thought that everything was fine. I worked my steps. I did whatever. And then a couple of years ago, I just kind of thought, okay, I still go to meetings. I still make my calls, but I wasn't really praying, wasn't really doing the step work, and found that, again, the compulsion came back much stronger than it ever had been. All of a sudden, I had more trigger foods than just the sugar and wheat. So I'm so grateful that I found this this vision again, and have a great sponsor, because here I am again doing all the work that I know I have to do, and that when I am doing it, it keeps me clean, keeps me honest, and keeps me on the road to recovery. So thank you very much for allowing me to share, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Diane, and thank you to everyone who has shared. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And will Sandy D. please read A Vision for You?
Thank you, Katie. I'd be happy to. Sandy D., recovered compulsive overeater in New York. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.